This is the Unconquered Podcast. Unbiased, unrivaled, and unconquered coverage and analysis of Florida State football.
If Florida State
will win national championships and ACC championships.
It's caught! Touchdown official, Kelvin Benjamin!
Back to some basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys getting a little banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success so you know something like really do this.
Game over! Those are the champions of college football!
Jameis, why? Jameis, no! No! No!
Welcome to the Unconquered Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Staples. Today in the podcast, we're going to be talking with Jackie Franchulli from WhoNation.com about the upcoming Florida State Virginia game. Jackie, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Jason.
So Virginia has been a bit of an enigma this year. They started the year 4-2 with actually two quality losses. One in which the opening game they outplayed, in my view, UCLA for most of that game. Only lost because they turned it over three times, and all three of which three times where they were returned for touchdowns, and they lost a close game in that game after those three turnovers. And then they lost another close game, another respectable loss to BYU on the road. So through six games, this looked like a very promising season for UVA. But over the past three games, they've gone on a three-game losing streak, losing to Duke. That's a quality loss. And then not a very good North Carolina team, and then getting spanked last week by Georgia Tech. What can Florida State fans expect from this Virginia team coming into this game, and sort of where is Virginia as a program coming into this game as they prepare to play Florida State?
That's a good question, Jason, because us covering UVA this year don't know what to expect on a day-to-day basis, just because, like you said, in the beginning of the year, you saw this defense was able to stop UCLA, stop BYU on the ground, those dual-threat quarterbacks. And then you see them against Georgia Tech, and it was just unbelievable how much the Yellow Jackets took control of that defense and really gave Maurice Canadé a game on Saturday. Maurice Canadé probably had one of his worst performances in a Cavalier uniform against Georgia Tech, and they were able to exploit some of the corners. And in the secondary, you know, obviously Quinn Blanding, a true freshman, has done great this year, but again, he's a true freshman, and Georgia Tech was able to exploit that on Saturday. So right now for UVA, they know it's a must-win situation on Saturday, and they can feel that Mike London, who wasn't on as hot 2 weeks ago, is scorching again. And he needs two wins out of the three. So obviously Florida State's going to provide quite a challenge, but they understand that they're fighting for Mike London right now. That's the mentality for each and every team. Eli Harold, at the end of last season, was almost crying in the post-game press conference to Virginia Tech, the last game of the season, saying they need to play for Mike London, they need to help him save his job, all the players need to step up. So right now, that's the same thing. Every single one of them saying they need to help save Mike London's job. So I think that's going to be the rally call from the Cavalier locker room this weekend.
So one of the things we talked about off-air was basically how you were saying, in so many ways, Virginia's been the polar opposite of Florida State. And you'd mentioned, you know, first half versus second half and some other situational stuff. Can you explain to us exactly what you mean when you were saying that UVA is sort of the opposite of Florida State so far this year?
Yeah, well, as all Florida State fans understand that, you know, Jameis Winston and Knowles are able to come back in the second half and win games. You know, Clemson, they were able to come back. You know, Louisville, they're able to come back. While Virginia is one that could have a 21-0 lead and then see it disappear in 2 seconds, like, for example, North Carolina. They're a team that in the second half, they haven't scored a touchdown for four games in the second half. They've only scored 6 points in the last four games, and that was a field goal against Duke and a field goal against North Carolina. And on Saturday, it was a horrible, horrible performance by that offense as well. They only had 111 second-half yards and two turnovers in that second half, and they had maybe one chance in the red zone. So when you look at those numbers and you see Florida State, you can see if Florida State goes up a very convincing lead in the first half, it's game over for UVA if all these other games dictate it. And even if let's say if UVA has not played a whole game throughout the entire season, if you look back at all the games, even against like Richmond and Kent State where they won pretty convincingly, both of those games, the first halves were horrible by Virginia. The only reason why they were able to come back was because they had an opponent like Kent State, and they also had a Richmond to come back with. And all those games, they were within a touchdown because they didn't perform quite well in the first half. So this whole year, although they were 4-2 before, they haven't been able to put together four quarters. And you can talk about the inexperience of a lot of the positions that UVA has currently. Both of their quarterbacks, Grayson Lambert and Matt Johns, this is the season, the first time they've had collegiate starts. Grayson Lambert got injured a couple weeks ago, so he only had three starts for UVA going to the fourth one against Florida State. Then their backup, Matt Johns, had to step up, and he only has had around three starts as well. So you got quarterbacks, they're inexperienced. Your offensive line had so many injuries coming into the season, so Coach Wackenheim had to really kind of put those together. So I don't know if that's one of the things where the inexperience, they lack the focus to carry on a whole game. And then with the offense not performing, you've got a defense who in itself has done a pretty good job most of these games. When you have so many three and outs on the offense, your defense is going to get tired. They're going to miss assignments. They're just not going to perform as well as, you know, Coach Sanuda wants them to. And that's what's been going on, is as the offense starts to stay shorter and shorter on the field or not producing as much, and even when they are in the red zone, for over 50% of the time, if they're just on the 20-yard line, within 30, 20-yard lines from the goal line, they're going for a field goal because they're not able to move the ball well in the red zone. And, you know, I don't understand what it is, but for some reason, they just can't move the ball. And sometimes they penalize themselves so many times in the red zone that sometimes even they miss a chance to get a field goal. So that's the sort of thing that UVA is trying to adjust now in the last three games, is kind of get back to focus, make sure you're not missing your assignments and you're executing. That's something that they were doing in the first two, three games here.
Yeah, that is indeed very much the opposite of Florida State, who's been the opposite, who's been, you know, they've been not so good in the first halves of games, as people have seen. You know, last week were 20. They were down 21 near the end of the first half, with about 2 minutes left in the first half, and then won the rest of the game 42-10. It's almost like Florida State gets bored until they're hit in the mouth, and then they come out and they're a completely different team. Actually, today the Brian Fremmel from Football Outsiders released an alternate FEI ratings, Fremmel efficiency ratings, that actually broke performance down into two halves. And Florida State was 22nd in the country in first half FEI and second in second half FEI, which sort of typifies the way that the year's gone. And I just looked up UVA, and UVA is 26th in the country in the first half and 66th in the second half. So, I mean, again, it's very much, like you said, it's polar opposite. And in the same way, Florida State has had a tremendous amount of success getting points when they've been in the red zone. They've maximized their red zone opportunities on both sides of the football. They're up near the top of the nation in both offensive and defensive red zone performance, which is one of the reasons that they've won a couple of the games on the margins that they've won. I mean, they don't win the Notre Dame game or the Clemson game without outstanding performance in the red zone on both sides of the ball. And a few breaks, obviously. They got breaks, but the red zone performance has been there. They weren't quite as good in their first game against Oklahoma State, but since then they've been dynamite in the red zone. So like you said, it's really a tale of two teams that are polar opposites here. And it's really, actually, when I look at UVA, it's hard for me to see why they've had, like you said, it's hard to understand why they've had trouble in the red zone to the same degree. I mean, I've got a theory, but normally in the red zone, you want quality lines and you want a solid running game. And what UVA brings into this game, as far as I can tell, without a doubt, is quality lines and the ability to run the football. And normally when you have those things, you expect to be better in the red zone, and they just haven't been.
No, and also you just got to look at their play calls in the red zone. That's something where I think all our beat reporters sometimes discuss in the press box, was that when you have a guy like Kevin Parks, you know, who amounted 355 yards on 70 carries, not counting Georgia Tech game, in those three games. Then you've got him against Georgia Tech. They hardly gave him the ball. Imagine, he only had 13 yards on 5 carries, which is one of the reasons why they lost against Georgia Tech, in my opinion, was because they didn't use him a lot. You've got a guy like that, but sometimes they do these screens or there's laterals in the red zone, and sometimes if you don't execute those correctly, you're going to lose so many yards instead of gaining them. And that's something that UVA lacks in the red zone. For some reason, something that executed midfield can't be executed in the red zone. It seems they kind of get deer in the headlights moments. So when you do have that effective run game, they don't use it. It's it feels like Steve Fairchild sometimes wants to outsmart the other opponent and not use their best strength because they're expecting that strength. But when you have a guy like Kevin Parks, who against Duke at some points was averaging 6 yards per carry, you use that guy. You just use him. Even Khalik Shepard has provided some great numbers on the ground too. So that's something where that UVA struggles is using those guys as more times than they need to, especially when you've got wide receivers like Miles Gooch is out for the whole season, for the rest of the season because of a knee surgery. You don't have that wide receiver, that big guy that can grab it in the end zone. You know, Keon Johnson is a physical wide receiver, but he drops so many balls. Against Georgia Tech, they had 8 drops. You don't win a football game by having 8 drops. And it wasn't, you know, overthrown passes. These were passes that there's no excuses. You needed to catch the ball. And something that UVA lacks this season, you know, last year they had Jake McGee. Jake McGee transferred to Florida, and they don't have that shining tight end. You know, UVA has a reputation to producing great tight ends, but yet their tight end, Zach Swanson, I think has only caught 3 balls this year, and actually one of them was against Georgia Tech in the end zone. But that's not a number that you want from your tight end. Obviously, he's a great blocker, but a tight end is not meant to be just a blocker. He's meant to catch those balls sometimes in the end zone to provide another outlet for the offense. And they just don't have that. So when you don't have someone working, like you don't have a tight end that's catching the balls, obviously you know the defense will understand what's going to happen. And honestly, sometimes I'm in the press box, and if I can tell you the play that's going to happen, no doubt that the defensive coordinator on the other team has watched film countless over the week is going to know exactly what's going to happen as well.
Yeah, and that's actually something. There was just a discussion on the Noel Digest premium boards actually today about some of Florida State's issues in that sense of predictability in certain formations and down and distances at this point. It hasn't affected him that much because they've executed well enough in general to get by with it. Although Florida State has not run the football all that well up until the last couple of weeks where it started to come around a little bit. But my theory in terms of what I've seen from UVA, it's not just play calling. I think one of the things that that's an issue there, and it's the same theme, you know, going back the last couple of years for UVA. I think the real issue that UVA continues to have is that they're not real confident in their quarterback. Mm-hmm. And when things get tight, when you get down in the red zone, tight zone areas, It's much more difficult if you don't trust your quarterback to be able to make throws into tighter windows and do so without turning the ball over, and you know, and also if you don't have playmakers on the outside to create space down in those zones, it gets much more difficult to run the ball. So even if you have a Parks who's had success between the 20s, now you get down in the red zone, tight zone, and all of a sudden it's much tougher sledding because there's no need for those safeties to stay back. And my impression has been that they've tried to avoid putting the quarterback in positions where he has to throw into those windows. But as you said, some of the things that they've done, you know, with, you know, fly sweeps and reverses and screen situations and all of that down inside the 20, some of it's worked. But at the same time, when you have losses, now guess what you have to do?
Exactly.
Now you're in a position where either you're just running to set up the field goal, or you're going to have to put Grayson Lambert or Matt Johns in position to actually throw into the very windows that you don't want them to have to throw into. And on that, you know, sort of on that same vein, let's flip the page a little bit and talk a little bit about the UVA offense in general and how that matches up with the Florida State defense, which is, again, Florida State fans used to, after last year, seeing a totally dominant unit. Last year is as dominant a unit as you're going to see. This year, you know, there's been some warts. There's been some weakness on the defensive side of the ball for Florida State. you know, especially they've given up some running yardage. They've given up some yardage in the against the run over the last, you know, over the whole season, particularly in first halves and particularly between the 20s. How then does UVA match up with the Florida State defense in this, and what can they do ultimately to hope to keep this game close on that side of the football?
Well, honestly, I think they're going to try to do the same game plan that they tried to instill in Georgia Tech and honestly failed, but control the ball. That's something that UVA has done pretty well apart from that game on Saturday. They've been able to dominate possession time by running the ball. And I feel like if you're going to beat Florida State, who, like you said, hasn't been well at defending the rush, that's something that UVA needs to exploit, because they do have a Kevin Parks. They do have a Khalik Shepard. And in the same way, they do have Taequann Mizell, which has been slowly coming together for UVA. He is in his second year, and he's getting healthier, so he's able to join in. And even wide receiver Darius Jennings has also pitched in on the ground as well for them. So I think that's the way where UVA needs to approach this game, is understand that don't go pass happy against Florida State. You're not going to win if you pass and go three and out and then your defense goes back on the field. Run the ball. Run as much as you can. Kevin Parks has averaged, I think, 4 or 5 yards per carry this year. So when you have a guy like that, you can obviously run and do some of those plays that Steve Fairchild has done, where he does a little couple of laterals with his wide receivers. He's actually quite creative on some of the plays he's done over the course of the year. It's just that, you know, it's execution. And then Grayson Lambert has shown that he can run a little bit. Matt Johns as well. Matt Johns, I always call him an awkward runner. But he at least he knows where the sticks are, and he'll get you the first down if you give him the ball. So, and I think Matt Johns, I think you were talking about how in play calling that UVA may be conservative in the red zone because they lack confidence in the quarterback. And I think the one guy that it's not mean they don't have confidence in Grayson Lambert, but if you watch Matt Johns in the red zone, if you watch Grayson Lambert in the red zone, it seems like the players have more confidence in Matt Johns' ability, although he has some decision-making problems sometimes. He throws the ball in double coverage a lot of times, and he has been picked off. But he, for some reason, he's like, I don't want to say Tim Tebow, but he's got that aura about him where the players kind of rally around Matt Johns, and not necessarily saying that there's any locker room heist between those two. All the players like both of the quarterbacks, but for some reason I see the wide receivers making catches for Matt Johns that I don't see them making for Grayson Lambert. So maybe, you know, use the two quarterback system a little bit more against Florida State when you realize that, in my opinion, they pulled Grayson Lambert a little bit too late against Georgia Tech. Maybe, you know, see if Grayson Lambert is not fully there. Obviously, he had an ankle sprain that took him out for a couple weeks. If you notice he's not able to run as well and he's getting a little bit too many hits, put Matt Johns in there a little bit earlier, but that he can provide a little bit more on his feet and he can run as well. So that's going to be the key. It's going to be the run game. If they can put the run game together, keep Florida State off the field as long as possible, especially in that second half where Florida State seems to get it together. And you know, never fall behind too much, because we've realized against Georgia Tech when UVA went down 14-0, the coaching staff kind of panics a little bit and they kind of switched their game plan and started to throw more balls. And obviously we understand against Georgia Tech, they love to possess the ball and that's why they didn't want to run as much. But in the end of the day, when you're going three and out every single time, maybe you should run the ball a little bit more. So,
yeah, so I wonder, you know, if you're going to try to run the football, you know, obviously you have to have a good matchup up front. And what's the health situation for UVA on the offensive line right now? This is the time of a year where, you know, if you're listening to Jimbo Fisher, you constantly hear, you know, such and such is well, we're a little banged and bruised. You know, that's the phrase that you're always hearing. Oh, you know, banged and bruised. Where is UVA's health in terms of the line at this point? What can Florida State expect to see on the defensive front?
Well, right now they have one big injury, one big doubt, which is Eric Smith. He's their right tackle. He sprained his ankle against Georgia Tech. Although Mike Lennon has said many times since then that he hopes that he will be playing and he doesn't have too much worry about it. That's, you know, a guy who sprains his ankle, even if he does come back, you know, you're still looking at him throughout the entire game and seeing if he's okay. Especially when, you know, he's trying to create gaps for your running back and going up against Florida State's defensive line. And then pretty much that's the only major worry on the offensive line right now. They just got back a lot of guys. Ryan Dowell has been incredible for UVA this season. So he's back in full health. He's back. And then Sadiq Laranju, the left tackle, is also back to full health. So their offensive line is actually finally getting back together now. They had most of their injuries in the beginning of the season and in preseason. So most of their starters is back. The only one that is not is Jackson Mateo, and we don't know when exactly he'll be back yet. He had surgery 3 weeks ago, and he's slated to be back at some point in the next three games, but nothing has been said. Mike Lennon has not said anything this week as to his health. They said they'll be releasing that on Thursday as far as an update with him. So honestly, the offensive line looks as healthy as they've had all season.
So let's switch sides then to the defensive side. And this is the side where I think UVA matches up obviously much better with Florida State, even though Florida State is much better on it's the side where both teams are better at this point in the season. Even though Florida State is much better on the offensive side at this point than they have been defensively, UVA's been very good defensively. I mean, even against Georgia Tech, one of the things that surprised me looking at that score, 35-10, I was surprised when I went and I looked at the numbers and I saw that Georgia Tech only had 5.38 yards per play in that game, which is actually pretty good defensively. I mean, those are good numbers defensively. You don't expect to lose games by 25 points when you're giving up fewer than 6 yards per play against an FBS school. I mean, I looked down the list at Georgia Tech's yards per play here. And, you know, they put up 6.05 against Virginia Tech. They put up 5.15 against Miami was the only game this year where they've put up fewer yards per play than they did against Virginia. And against North Carolina, it's 8.86. Against Pittsburgh, 8.05 yards per play. And then 3 yards fewer per play against Virginia and still giving up 35 points. So clearly there's, you know, that's has to do with the offense giving up advantageous field position with some turnovers and things. Mm-hmm. But the defense could compete. There's no doubt.
No, the defense can compete. You know, we saw that every single game this year. You know, sometimes it's sad to see the scoreline when you're talking to defensive guys post-game because, honestly, look at their stat sheet like you just did and say, like, wow, how did this team lose 35-10 at these numbers? And it was field position. You know, when Georgia Tech starts in their own 40 most of the time, you know, you're it's easy to get a point from that position. And, you know, for some reason also the last two games for the defense, they've also struggled against big plays. Against North Carolina had three scoring plays of 50 yards or more. And then the first three possessions for Georgia Tech were all over 11 yards. So for some reason right now, the cornerbacks have been really struggling in their assignments lately. And that's something where many teams have decided to exploit UVA. Obviously, they've got All-American Anthony Harris, safety, and that five-star true freshman Quinn Blanding. Quinn Blanding leads the ACC in tackles, I think, with 89 this year. And because Tenuta likes running the second safety blitz. And those two guys have been great for UVA in the back. But the cornerbacks, for some reason, when they're missing their assignments, they're leaving so much gaps, and they're not turning their heads towards the balls, which kind of surprised me in some of the occasions. And they're giving up way too many big plays, and that's been their downfall the last two games. This wasn't happening before North Carolina. All the other points and all the other touchdowns before, you can see fatigue was setting in most of the time because the offense was going three and out many of the times. And even against dual threat quarterbacks, when you can control Taysom Hill of BYU to, I think less than 114 yards on the run, actually less than 100 yards on the run because they had their first 100-yard rusher, against Georgia Tech. So if you look at all these numbers, and the defense will keep UVA as close as possible, because Jameis Winston loves to throw the ball so much, I would expect that Anthony Harris and Quinn Blanding will have more playing time this week, will more have more plays where they're involved in, and that's going to be fun to see because both of those guys can read the quarterback so well. Quinn Blanding had two picks this season, and honestly, he's probably should have had four or five just because he's got the ball in his hands so many times and just fell through or he drops it. Anthony Harris, the same thing. He's had two picks this season, and the same thing for him. He's been able to read the quarterback so well and go towards the pass. So that's going to be interesting. I think that's going to be a great fight between him. And obviously, UVA's front seven, I don't never want to be in a room where Eli Harrell and Henry Coley are running after you. So those two guys have been great. And Max Vallis in the nickel position has done wonders for UVA as well. He's a guy that has kind of created his own position with UVA. And although sometimes maybe in assignment he kind of goes a little bit worrying the faster type of offenses, I think with Florida State's offense, I think this is when Max Vallis can shine a little bit more.
Yeah, when I look at when I've watched UVA play, I mean, they've had some guys that have really flashed to me, and Eli Harrell is the one that sticks out the most over and over again. He and Ant Harris are the ones that stick out over and over again. I mean, Harrell to me is sort of like a poor man's Vic Beasley from Clemson, and it's not an especially poor man. I mean, he's very similar kind of player, maybe a little bit stronger at the point of attack. He's maybe what, about 250, 255 from what I could tell.
Yep.
I mean, he carries that weight awfully well, is a real handful, and they move him around a little bit, which is, he's got 13 tackles for loss. I just looked that up. He's got 13 tackles for loss. You know, that's a terrific number at this point in the season. Really disruptive player. And again, Henry Coley as well from the outside linebacker position, similar production. But the other thing that has stuck out to me is UVA is very strong at the defensive tackle positions. I expected to see, Andrew Brown come in right away and make a difference there. But they have some veterans there as well that have made that into a rotation where they've got some solid defensive tackle play. They've gotten some solid defensive tackle play all year. Can you tell us a little bit more about what they do that makes it so difficult up front?
Yeah, well, David Dean and you've got Mike Moore. Those are the two guys that are just so powerful and experienced up front. They've understood John Tenuta's scheme for the last 2 years. And when you last year, John Tenuta was the first year as defensive coordinator at UVA. And those two guys really bought into his aggressive system. So, and they're so strong up front, they pretty much play smash football. They will get at you. And I know you mentioned Andrew Brown. He had a lot of injury problems during this year. He had a turf toe injury that he had surgery. And then when he got back, he had shoulder issues. So UVA was just blessed with all these veterans coming back. And I think that's the main reason when they will come at you and will provide space for Eli Harrell and then Henry Coley from the middle come at the quarterback now. And that's the main difference. When you have those two guys handling the line, well, then Henry Coley comes at you and Eli Harrell and comes at you on the corner and through the edge. That's where quarterbacks start scrambling. That's when they will make an error. That's when they will make a decision when they might, they could maybe cause a pass breakup or maybe he throws a pick or an incompletion. And that's why UVA is so good. The only thing that they're so aggressive all the time that sometimes that could be, their only faults as well. Sometimes they go for it so strong that they leave an opening for maybe, for Georgia Tech, they leave an opening for that run that might cost them 10, 15 yards.
Yeah, that's been a hallmark of Tenuta's career. I mean, Florida State fans have been well acquainted with John Tenuta defenses for a long time. I mean, he coached before Virginia. He was at NC State. He wasn't the coordinator there, but he's the linebackers coach. Before that, he was a coordinator at Notre Dame for a little bit. And then before that, 2002 to 2007, he was actually at Georgia Tech, and Florida State saw him quite a bit. And he's a guy that blitzes the heck out of you. He brings a lot of fire zone, he'll bring a lot of six and even seven man pressures, and he's willing to deal with the potential big plays if he can put pressure on the quarterback. And with this UVA team, they've had the front to be able to do it, and the safeties to be able to play over the top a little bit. The interesting thing for me will be whether they can handle the Florida State wide receivers over the course of this game, taking that approach. I mean, blitzing Winston has been, since last year, blitzing Winston has normally not been the way to go. But this year, last year it wasn't. This year it's been a little bit more of a risk reward because there have been times where teams have gotten to Winston a little bit, and there have been times where Winston has not responded as well to pressure this year as he did last year, in part because he's gotten adjusted to new receivers, the protection hasn't been quite as good, especially in up the middle with Florida State's problems at center. where, you know, they're continuing to start a redshirt freshman who's really struggled because they're, you know, they lost their senior starter last year in Brian Stork, who had won the Remington Award as the nation's top center last year. They replaced him with a senior this year who broke his arm against Wake Forest, and now they're this is I believe the fourth game where they'll be starting the redshirt freshman Ryan Hofeld in his place, and this has been a problem. They've had trouble blocking good defensive tackles up the middle, and when you're getting pressure up the middle, it's easier than to do what you want in terms of pressuring the quarterback and causing some potentially bad decisions. So that to me is the matchup here, to see if they're able to get any of that pressure on Winston and cause some problems. If they aren't, then this is going to be a very, very long game for Virginia. If they're able to pressure Winston into some inaccuracy, this could stay close for a little while. And then, you know, things get a little interesting. If you were going to guess, so let's start to wrap a little bit, but if you were going to guess on how this game was going to transpire in about 30 seconds, what would you guess? How would you write up the column, the post game column for what has happened? We're Saturday night now. The game's already been played. What happened between UVA and Florida State?
Oh man, I think UVA will keep it sort of close in the first quarter. If they start with the ball, I think they'll control possession and maybe even steal a field goal in the first couple of possessions. And I think by the end of the second quarter, you can see Jameis Winston and Florida State kind of grab a hold of the game. And I don't think the offense will stay on the field as much as Mike Lennon would have liked. And I think by the third and fourth quarter, I think Florida State will run away with it a little bit. And I think at the end of the day, Virginia fans will remember missed opportunities, will remember a couple mistakes and a couple missed assignments, and that will be the story. And I think there will be two or three big plays where the defense will allow, and that's when Florida State will go ahead. And I think the offense will also turn over the ball two or three times.
Well, thanks for joining us, Jackie. Looking forward to Saturday's game. And again, my guest has been Jackie Franciulli from WhoNation.com. On behalf of Who Nation, Jackie, and the rest of the Knoll Digest crew, this is Jason Staples. This has been the Unconquered Podcast. Thanks for listening. I made this.